Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dave Winogrand, Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense. Also joining us today from IBM is Kevin Green. Dave, I talked to many of my guests about the use of collaboration, partnerships among agencies and with the private sector to achieve mission results. How are you leveraging partnerships to improve operations and outcomes, and how will these partnerships change over time?
I feel very strongly about this. So you'll have to forgive me. But as we touched on in the last segment, you know, if you don't recognize the value of these social media, social networking tools, the power of collaboration, the power of a doctor being able to find another doctor halfway around the world to collaborate in real time in telemedicine, the ability to reach out and find the expert, then you are completely missing the point about the way the world is done here. And if you imagine that the things like Facebook or YouTube are about not working, and then the rest of the stuff is about working, you're going to get left behind. And so, you know, with everything, there's a sort of continuum that takes place. So if you look at the Department of Defense, for example, at one end of the spectrum, you have a highly classified work done by intelligence analysts that you obviously wouldn't want to do on the open internet. So they developed a tool called ASpace. It's a collaboration tool. It's like a Facebook, but it's firmly embedded and restrained within a highly classified network for highly classified work. If you go to the other end of the spectrum, people are using tools like Facebook to get the mission done. Disaster relief, communications with non-government entities. And so it's a continuum of using these tools because the power of mass collaboration is something hugely important. Partnerships are crucial. If you don't have other people engaged in the change, they won't have skin in the game. They won't help be aligned to where you want to go, and they'll slow down your progress continually. There is a need to think differently. For years, we've either paid attention to the need to share information or the need to be more secure, but never at the same time. And so we've created this horrible dichotomy about, you know, you either care about security or you care about sharing. Barry Johnson wrote a book called Polarity Management, and in it he said that, you know, while some things in life are problems to solve, many things in life are a polarity of two things that you have to manage together effectively. Examples of those are change and stability, the enterprise view and the local view. If you optimize on one, you do so at peril to the whole system. He uses the example of breathing, you know, that inhaling and exhaling are done for completely different purposes. But if you optimize on one, problem for the system. Well, the big one that we face today is information security, information sharing. And the problem is if you say, well, oh my gosh, security's bad, so I'm going to focus on that, then you do so at the peril of sharing and vice versa. So we've got to get out of a mindset that looks at them separately and instead says, secure information sharing is the key. How can you make sure that you're sharing with everyone you need to while you're raising the bar in security? And if you look at life that way, you will pick different security solutions. You'll move away from a world that only thinks about firewalls and locking down. And instead, you'll look at how you can be secure while you traverse the tools and the internet and stuff. And so you'll train the workforce better. You'll do internet content filtering and other things to help you know what's coming into your network. You'll reduce your number of access points. So you'll do all these things to help you be able to collaborate while you're raising in the bar in security. You got to think differently. And one of the ways that you can do it is through this idea about transparency. You know, if you want people to get over the control that they felt by doing it themselves, if you can give them the sort of service level agreements and the performance measures so they can actually see that working together, you can make more progress, then we can begin to work in a world where we feel like collaboration is important, valued, and helping, not just a threat to the security of the agency.
In some quarters, there's a perception that government lags behind the commercial sector in technology innovation. First of all, do you think this perception is accurate? And second, how do you think government could enhance its position to become a leader and a driver for leveraging technologies?
I do think that the world's a different place today, and that more than, you know, decades ago, the government is much more reliant on research and development and innovation from the private sector. Certainly the Department of Defense is. We're much more reliant upon the rest of the industry base to help us with the new ideas for the future. And that's okay, because there is this idea about, you know, many minds working together is better than thinking you have all the answers yourself. But that would be the key. This moving away from these relationships that were sort of based on, you know, I'm the person who says what I need and you're the vendor that provides to me. Instead, about having strategic partnerships with industry and academia where we think about an outcome we want to achieve and we use, you know, innovative ways of getting the work done, like performance-based contracts and managed service arrangements and stuff, where the best minds from industry and government can work together and innovate together, you know, are really important so that we can take advantage of what's happening in industry and factor that into our decisions rather than thinking the idea that we had from a couple of years ago is the right idea for a couple of years in the future. And I guess the last point to that that regard is making sure you have all the right ideas in the game. And so moving into a world where you take advantage of these, again, social media tools and things like that to get more and more companies in the game, small companies, companies that are innovative companies that maybe didn't do work with the government in the past, all get a chance to understand what's needed and participate in creating the future.
Well, given the critical role technology plays in mission and program delivery, plus your wealth of experience, how's the role of the CIO evolved over time? And what do you consider the key characteristics of a successful CIO of the future?
It's a continuing evolution. It's like anything, you know. I still sort of see that CIOs kind of fall into two camps. Some CIOs are sort of more technologists, and I would say sort of more focused on operations. Some CIOs tend to skew more towards strategic and results for the mission of the organization. And we sort of have to think about that as we go forward about, you know, what's your primary focus? And of course, it depends on what level of the organization you're in and what kind of an organization you work for. But my sense is that the future is going to be more about alignment to mission outcomes for the organization. You know, to get past this idea about, well, I'm the technology advocate, so I'm perceived as technology for technology's sake, right? And so CIOs, of course, need to stay abreast of technology, but they also have to have strong management and leadership skills and understanding, you know, the goals of the organization beyond the information space so that you can show how information and information systems help drive to the results of the organization in the language that the organization understands. How are you doing in planning? How are you doing in alignment? How are you doing in execution and delivery? I think those are all sort of keys to the success for CIOs as we move forward.
Well, keeping on the idea of moving forward, I'd like to have you put your prognostication hat on. And what are some of the major opportunities and challenges your organizations will encounter in the future? And more importantly, how do you envision your office changing to meet these changing challenges?
Well, the good thing about new organizations is, you know, they're not hidebound by the fact that they've been around for decades. So we won't at least have to deal with that. But you are right. The world is changing at a very rapid pace. And again, if you can sort of accept that rather than deny it and embrace it, it's huge challenges, but it's also huge opportunities. I think that if you look at, like, what's happening now, again, what used to take us months or years, or you can do in days or hours, if you give people the right kind of tools, are you focused on this concept of telework? Are you focused on this ability that I ought to be able to be connected from anywhere and find the people and the information I need to get my job done? And that's a world of tablets and droids and iPhones and, you know, and the ability to have any kind of channel. And it's a world that's embraced the cloud and has people being able to get the information out there where it needs to be so I can find it wherever I am. I can get on any computing device, not just the computer in my office, and get to the things that I need to do. Those are things that are changing the way we're doing the world, the way the world operates, and it's also changing the way we do our business. And I know I sound like a broken record, but it's about speed and agility. It's about making sure that you have continuous learning environments so people are staying abreast about how the world's changing. Do you have the ability to adapt rapidly? Are you aligned to some common business plan? And are you measuring the progress of that plan? The future looks significantly different, but I'm hopeful that you could view it as a moment of opportunity, not one to fear.
So, Dave, what advice would you give somebody who's looking or possibly thinking about a career in public service?
Well, I've spent my life, you know, working for the Department of Defense, and I would say, you know, I watched the men and women all around me who have chosen careers of service and sacrifice, and they're an inspiration to me every day. And so I think there's something very noble about this call to public service, and I would offer to, you know, the young people that are thinking about what they want to do with their lives, that it's a chance to make a big difference. I mean, you know, I think across the government, there's opportunities to make a big difference. If I could be parochial for a minute, I would say in the Department of Defense, you know, there are leadership opportunities that you get if you join the military or if you become a government civil servant that, you know, you might not get in other career fields. Leadership at a younger age, the ability to run things and manage and make a difference. And so, again, back to this idea about, you know, the workforce of our future, the next generation workforce. I mean, they are our prime demographic. 18-year-olds coming out of high school to join the military, 21, 22-year-olds coming out of college to join the military or come to work as government civilians or come to work for our industry partners, which are all part of the total force, right? I mean, if we can give them the tools that they need, if we can give them the work kind of environment that they need, if we can change the way we do supervision so it's not about once a year doing a performance appraisal, but it's more about mentoring and giving leadership opportunities and coaching, then wow. So I would say to you, I guess, if you're thinking about careers of public service, there are certain skills that you want to have. I mean, there are certain basic skills, and no matter what kind of job you end up with, are very helpful to you. You know, how does money work? Because understanding financial management is understanding the lifeblood of any organization, public or private. So financial management, understanding program management, how do you run projects, understanding how the personnel system works. There's sort of all sort of level, you know, sort of entry points about doing it. Stay abreast of technology because today everyone is a technologist. There's almost no job that isn't touched by technology. But really importantly, understand the place that you want to work and its mission. Be able to talk the language of the mission of the organization. Be able to talk about how what needs to be done will help improve that mission, or else you're sort of talking in a vacuum and people only listen to you a little bit. I would say to you, come on board. Make a difference. There's huge opportunities out there.
Well, Dave, I want to thank you for being here today. It's always a pleasure to have you. But more importantly, Kevin and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Well, thank you, Michael. Thank you, Kevin. It's great to be here with you. It's great to be back. I am a repeat offender, and I'm thrilled that you invited me back.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Dave Winogrand, Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense. My co-host from IBM has been Kevin Green. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.